Progressive rock has been around for a while. It's difficult to categorize. It's progressive, perhaps, because it wants a little respect, and by morphing classical rock and improvisational sound, complex compositions, weighty lyrics, prog rock has nailed down an audience hungry for something beyond doo-wop and has built a loyal following of diehard prog rock fans since the 1970s. David Weigel has been following prog rock for decades. His day job is as a national reporter for the Washington Post, but his new book, released this week after years of moonlighting as a prog rock historian, is The Show That Never Ends, The Rise and Fall of Progressive Rock.
The classification of what this music was kind of controversial in the bands who were actually making it. Some of them did not like the label progressive, but some frankly kind of glommed onto it, and the record industry glommed onto it. Harvest Records, Virgin, progressive was basically music kind of starting, growing out of the psychedelic and beat movements in the 60s in the UK, and then evolving to bring in influences from classical music, from Asian music, from experimental kind of bang on a found objects music. But it was super expansive, and that's one thing I found in talking to some of these musicians, especially because prog as an aesthetic was not like punk, where people were ever really proud to wear it. Some of them quibbled with calling it that.
And part of this was fans yearning for a musical aesthetic that had more depth than just the pop world.
These guys were about as young as the punks were when they came along and blew it up 10 years later when they started. This was radical and challenging and new. It was something breaking out of the form they were used to, which was, you know, Motown covers and sounding a lot like bands that were popular already. Bands like Yes and Soft Machine and King Crimson, they were working in recognizable forms in ways that were just bracing. I mean, Soft Machine, for example, playing at the Proms, the annual BBC classical music competition, as an example of what was new. Being elevated as music that was worth listening to if you were a serious fan. And at the same time, bands like Emerson, Lake and Palmer anchoring festivals for 400,000 people. You know, the equivalent of someone now who's going to festivals to hear Chainsmokers or something. They were listening to this, but I think the relationship was much less random and changeable. It was really devoted because these artists were seen as hunkering down and writing challenging music, just hits.
It was a fusion, and there was a lot of fusion to be done. I mean, I remember the Miles of Isles tour of Joni Mitchell, which had Pat Metheny in it. You know, and I mean, and Jaco Pastorius played in that band.
I'll try to keep myself open up to you. That's a promise that I made.
Now, in disparaging prog rock, I remember a fan once told me, a fan of all music, once told me that what prog rock's legacy is that it brought back the light show guy.
Yeah, it did. I have a lot about light shows in the book because at the time, the idea of an enveloping concert experience where you'd go and King Crimson would have a radical light show sync the music, or Hawkwind would have a 6-foot-tall female body-painted dancer interpreting the music, where Yes, you could see them as the show went on, slowly rotating or coming to the stage in sort of a cocoon. Stuff that was kind of pioneered by them, frankly, made fun of by Spinal Tap. This was just dynamic stuff that was easy to make fun of, but at the time, I mean,
it's like opera.
Side
it's
of
theater.
The music. Yeah, well, yeah. They all had this sense of pomp, but not in a negative way. I always am hesitating to say pompous. No, it was full of pomp, but full of pomp because it was fun. It was really fun to see a band take over a giant venue and play a classical music piece, reinterpret it, and then smash a synthesizer at the end of it. It became kitschy later, but some of these people, like Rick Wakeman, were aware of the kitsch in the time and leaned in. It was just really fun to take these giant conventions, play around with amazing technique, compared to what, not just what replaced it, but what I see with a lot of rock now is, you know, four guys with t-shirts go on stage and strum for an hour and a half and they're off.
Sing the grave. You to begin,
Who are your favorite bands?
Came Crimson, especially because they have reconstituting in the last couple of years with a new three drummer lineup, and as is usual with King Crimson, Robert Fripp, with whatever musicians he thought made the music sound fresh in the year he's playing it. I think they're fantastic, and there's a diversity there that it's fun to play them and shuffle if you have guests over. You can tell there's a through line that it's the same band, but it's not the same genre. The artist I like got bored with what they were doing quickly. I think Yes holds up. I think Soft Machine holds up. And Gentle Giant.
Oh, I love Gentle Giant.
Gentle Giant's one that I discovered as I was interviewing fans to kind of poll and get a sense of what needed to be included in the book. Gentle Giant, just a technically brilliant band that used a lot of things that just did not make sense to anyone else in rock music. Like Renaissance choral vocal harmonies and strange chordal phrasings. A band that went to open for Black Sabbath, and I have some of them in the book. They were awkward marriages put together by these critics. And as ducks swim away from her visions of past love appear. Because it's unique and because it was so gleeful about bending what was normal in pop and rock music.
Progressive rock! Let's take a gander at that cover art and try to pretend you're not already inspired.
It's like something out of a dream.
Painted by our greatest living artist, Mr. Roger Dean.
Hey!
Everyone's very aware of what you can make fun of with progressive rock, and sometimes the fans get to make fun of it first, like any good fan base.
The fact that they're still challenging themselves mm-hmm. means that they're having fun. It's not just, oh, play the songs, yeah. collect a check, you know. Don't die.
I think the appreciation technique, there's been a reappreciation of things that were identified as outsidery and a bit geeky from the popularity of Game of Thrones to even just the big hit box office comedies now are people who are kind of wordy. And I've seen some of this music get wrapped up in there. But when I've seen pop culture appropriate progressive recently, it has been a little bit less mocking. Or if it's mocking, it's so specific that you know they're in on it.
Dave Weigel, thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Weigel's book, The Show That Never Ends, The Rise and Fall of Progressive Rock, is out in bookstores this week.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.